Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
And now, a few minutes with U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator. How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you? I hope you and your listeners are all well.
We're doing good. Yeah, thank you so much for asking. Appreciate good. It. I wanted to really take time with you this morning. I appreciate the fact that you're giving us time every week. I want to talk about the stimulus bill, this latest package that is being worked on right now. And it seems like it's getting closer to a resolution. There are parts of it that I want to just kind of dive into a little bit deeper, because there still is a little bit of a divide right now. President Biden has put forward a certain plan that's a little bit higher than it seems like Republicans would like to put forward. And I find that I would love to have some clarity on this, like why there's such a big gap in the two proposed plans. So first and foremost, what are some of the biggest things? Let's start with that, coming out of this package.
First, you referred to the size, and I would just emphasize, Melissa, that this amount was not pulled out of thin air. It's nearly $2 trillion because our economy is in a deep hole.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, having seen them yourselves, I'm sure people are in lines for food, for testing, for vaccines. There are shortages of vaccines around Connecticut, even though we have many clinics and sites ready to provide it. And of course, people are out of work, still trying to put food on the table. And our economy's projections for the future are for continuing massive unemployment unless there is a drastic spending plan. So the stimulus, as it's named, is indeed designed to stimulate the economy by putting money into people's pockets, putting vaccine into their arm, and putting students back in school safely. That is what is necessary, a massive effort to deal with a massive problem. And the calculation is that we would continue with tremendous unemployment, as we did after the last Great Recession in 2008, where unemployment persisted for many years, if we fail to take this kind of major step. And so it deals with the problem in the multifaceted way that the problem exists. For example, it provides the $2,000 stimulus payment to people, another $1,400 in addition to the $600 that was provided in December. It provides for an extension of unemployment insurance to make sure that people out of work can continue to support themselves. It provides for rental assistance so people can stay in their homes. And it provides for vaccine delivery, $160 billion. So we can meet the shortages that are occurring in Connecticut and around the country through making more of it, delivering more of it, making sure that it gets into people's arms. And then it also provides for $130 billion for school reopening, not just reopening, but doing it safely with protective equipment, vaccines for teachers, other kinds of steps that are necessary. And that is the kind of approach that it takes. Now, the Republican proposal is one-third of it. It's just a shadow of what we need. And I hope that we can work with our Republican colleagues and they'll cooperate and we'll reach a compromise. But one way or the other, we need to move ahead, and it has to be a major, massive program, big and bold, and it has to be done right away, because every week that passes, people continue to suffer, and the unemployment becomes more entrenched. Our economy, for example, small businesses that are continuing to struggle, I heard from a number of them yesterday, they need more aid. Our entertainment venues, restaurants, they're going through a really dark and difficult period. We need to act urgently.
Yeah, so I was, and I appreciate kind of the breakdown of that, Senator Blumenthal, because I was looking at it and trying to just be transparent with our listeners, because I think depending on what news source you read or you watch, you're going to get different, you know, statuses. But looking at the breakdown of it, like I'm looking at it right now in dollar amounts and everything, and like you mentioned, the stimulus checks of $1,400, $400 extra for federal unemployment benefits, vaccine delivery, as you had mentioned, the child tax credit expansion, which again is for anybody under the age of 17, if you have children under that age. Here's my question. There are a couple things in here that I'm curious why it needs to be in this package. First of all, can you actually clarify? I know that the president is very big on raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So explain the difference, why we need to put that in this package. Like I look at here in Connecticut, we passed a law that over a 5-year period, we will get our minimum workers to make that much. I think it's by the year 2023 here in Connecticut. I could double check that. But like, why is that part of this package? Or like student loans, for example, those existed well before the pandemic. Like, why are we trying to address those things in this package so we could maybe find a middle ground and keep more of that money going towards, like you said, stimulus, businesses, vaccine delivery, reopening schools safely? Some of these things don't seem to quite add up, at least from my standpoint. I'd love some clarity on that.
From the standpoint of the total package, Melissa, those items are a relatively minor part in terms of the $1.9 trillion.
Oh, okay.
Even if you took those out, you would get nowhere near the $600 billion. That's, you know, less than one-third of the president's proposal. But let's take them one at a time. You just made the point about the minimum wage. Indeed, we have it here. Other states have it at $15. And like Connecticut, the federal government would phase it in over a period of time. Why do we have it here in Connecticut? Because we want to give people the means to support themselves. If they're paid less than the minimum wage, or if the minimum wage is unrealistic, then the government has to supplement their income with food nutrition assistance, the SNAP program, and other kinds of assistance. Child care tax credit, take another one, guarantees that children are not living in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It would lift out of poverty about half the children who right now are in households that frankly don't have enough to put food on the table, clothe their children, provide them with medicine. It's not a huge amount of money, probably a few thousand dollars, but it will help lift those children out of poverty. And that is the kind of approach that we want on student debt. For example, a pause in student debt payments will enable those students to maybe do a little bit better. It's not that the debt would be completely forgiven, but a pause is necessary so they can right their financial situations, right the ship, and begin payments later.
I have to imagine, though, that the reason I would think the other side doesn't want to go as high in other areas of this is because we're in tremendous amount of debt, I would think. Like on the back end, if we go forward with this plan that the president has put forward, I mean, I think, unfortunately, you've probably heard it, you know, more than I think most people, just because you're in Washington, D.C., and you hear from both sides. But, you know, like a lot of people will say, I hate to say this even term because I think it's appalling, but like United States of China, like people feel like we are going to just be in such debt that we can't get out of it at any point.
The debt is a consideration, no question about it. You're right to raise it. And so are my Republican colleagues. Although I must tell you, I hope you'll spare me the crocodile tears. These Republicans are the same senators, many of them, who voted for more than a $1 trillion tax cut a few years ago that benefited the wealthy. Up to now, Melissa, we have come together in a bipartisan way on three major pandemic relief packages.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, with a Democrat in the White House, they want to go small rather than going big. Debt is a consideration, but you have to view it as an investment. If you need to fix your home, if your roof leaks, you're going to destroy a lot of your property, make the house worthless unless you fix the roof. That's kind of a simplistic way of viewing it. But we still have that broken roof.
Right.
Our economy is still in a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
We need to get out of it. We need to view it as an investment. And here's the good news. The cost of borrowing for the federal government, you know what it is.
Right. Yeah.
It's zero. So we're doing it at a time when the borrowing costs will not add to the debt.
I wanted to bring something to especially our audience attention. I'm sure you're aware of it. If not, I could certainly talk to you a little bit about it here. I was reading in the AARP bulletin, anyone born in the year 1960 could see a big drop in their Social Security benefits. I don't know if you read anything or heard anything on this for the Protecting Benefits for Retirees Act. Have you heard about that at all?
I think I've heard a couple of complaints or suggestions about it, and we have been trying to fix it for some time.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested in hearing more if you want to send me some material on it.
Sure. Because this
if your listener wants to get in touch with me directly.
Yeah, because he sent this article, which was really fascinating. Like, I was reading it, and for anyone who doesn't know, your Social Security benefits are based on the top earnings you have over a 35-year period. But before they give you that money, they do a calculation, and it's adjusted 2 years prior to your eligibility, which is 62. So anyone who was born in the year 1960 is going to have their year 2020 evaluated. So it's literally only for people who were born in 1960. And I'm just curious if, like, Congress would be looking to do anything about this, only because it could mean for those folks like a 9% lower earning in their Social Security benefits.
What is the date of the AARP article?
Let me pull it up right here because I could send it to you. It was really interesting. Pat sent it in to me, one of our listeners. And I thought it was fascinating, and I hadn't heard much about it. It says February of 2021, so it was just released this month.
I will look into it, and I'll report back to you in our next conversation.
That would be
great. And if
you'd
like to send it to me, my email is richard@blumenthal.senate.gov.
Perfect. I am emailing it to you right now.
richard@blumenthal.senate.gov.
All right. I am literally emailing it to you as we speak right now. I really appreciate that, Senator. Thank you for looking into that. And thank you for sticking around extra time. I always appreciate talking to you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We'll talk again next week. Checking in right now with Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz this morning. And Lieutenant Governor, thanks for stopping by. How are you?
I am well, thank you. And it's always great to start your day at a cupcake shop.
Oh, where are you right now? Where are you?
Well, I am in my home in Middletown, but at 10 o'clock, I will be at Good Morning Cupcake in Milford. And I'm going there because they received an equity match grant as a result of a program that the Women's Business Development Council and our Department of Economic and Community Development put together to specifically help female-owned small businesses who are still reeling from the pandemic.
First of all, that sounds amazing to have cupcakes that early in the morning. That sounds like a dream. Love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But definitely the bigger thing here, Lieutenant Governor, that I'm glad you're bringing awareness to is, you know, grants for these businesses that have really struggled. Why focus on, it sounds like, women-owned businesses, entrepreneurs? You know, why focus on that for this equity match grant program?
So our focus on this came out of research done on the number of Connecticut businesses and the types of Connecticut businesses that were able to get federal loans from the Small Business Administration, whether it was the PPP or the EIDL. And here's the very important point. 78% of the businesses that received loans were male-owned, and 84% of them were white-owned. So we wanted to make sure that women-owned businesses and minority-owned women businesses, which you know, have suffered the most, because a lot of women-owned businesses are retail or restaurant or hospitality related. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make sure that they got the assistance that they needed. So the Women's Business Development Council based in Stamford and I reached out to banks, and we got more than a dozen banks and individuals to contribute over $500,000, and then our Department of Economic and Community Development matched that with another $500,000 so that women-owned businesses could get grants as long as they provided some of the equity. So, for example, we're going to this cupcake shop, Good Morning Cupcake, and the owner of that business, Adriana Robles, contributed money from her business, and she is receiving $6,500 to purchase new equipment that's going to help her as she pivots and expands her business. She realized that in addition to selling cupcakes, one of her most lucrative business services was teaching baking classes.
Oh, sure. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So love she, that.
That's a very popular thing. And so she purchased equipment so that she can expand her business to do more of that. So I'll be visiting with her at 10 o'clock this morning and seeing how this is going. And for any of your listeners who are wondering, can they apply? If you are a woman-owned business and you would like to apply, you can visit the DECD website, the Department of Economic and Community Development website, or the Women's Business Development Council website to get details. And again, if you match, if you provide a match, you can get a grant. It's not a loan. That's one of the really nice things. You can get a grant of up to $10,000.
And you don't have to pay that back. That's amazing.
Have to pay that back. But remember, you are going to have an equity match.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these grants are going to people who want to have an online presence that didn't have an online presence before, mm-hmm. or the purchase of equipment to expand or enhance their business.
Lieutenant Governor Susan Bisewitz is here. And Lieutenant Governor, repeat that again for me. What was the percentage of male-owned businesses that got money?
Okay, so 78% of the businesses that got money from the SBA were male-owned, and 84% were white-owned. And so that's why a very small percentage, 6% were Hispanic-owned and 3% were Black-owned. So we decided, given those statistics, that we would try to focus on women and female minorities.
Oh, no, that makes so much sense when you look at the data. My question is, why is it so drastic? It's a very big number for both those categories. Like, why are we finding minority-owned businesses and women-owned businesses did so poorly?
I think the answer is that you had a lot of businesses owned by women, restaurants, small retail shops, some hospitality and travel related, and they were so small, some of these businesses may not have even had a financial institution or a bank that they worked with. It made it really difficult for them to apply. And this is one of the reasons why I really stress to business owners, small business owners, whether you're a man or a woman, get in touch with the Women's Business Development Council or the Connecticut Small Business Assistance Center, because those places provide incredible resources to small businesses, and they will help you choose the right financial institution to work with, get your books in order, help you with QuickBooks so that you can easily print out your profit and loss statements, which you would need to apply for any of these kinds of programs.
Mm-hmm.
And now is a really good time to start that relationship with the Women's Business Development Council or the Small Business Assistance Center, because you can also be applying for a new round of PPP or EIDL funding from the federal government and be ready for any new state economic development programs that are coming up in addition to this one. But I did want to just stress that there have been about a half a dozen businesses that have received this funding from the Equity Match Grant Program, but there are other funds that are available. So please, if you're a woman-owned business, you're a female business, and you have minority ownership, please apply. We'd love to see you get some funding.
Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz, thank you so much, and enjoy those cupcakes this morning.
Can't wait. Thank you.
All right. Sounds good. I'm sure you heard about this. I know it's not the first time efforting it, but it's back again. We've got some lawmakers here in Connecticut who would like to get rid of daylight savings time altogether. And immediately my mind went to who else but Bill Jackman. So what are your thoughts on this and why should they either get rid of it or keep it, in your opinion?
Yippee. It's one of the things we do that costs so much money, and it's really pointless. I mean, it served its time, you know, in the day, you know, to save energy and do what it needed to do. But, you know, we're a 24-hour society, and quite simply, it's not saving anything. It actually costs money because not everything turns ahead or back. When we do this twice a year, and remember, it's twice a year because you have to turn your clocks ahead in the spring and back in the fall. Mm-hmm. So we're doing this twice a year, and things are not automatic. And just the bottom line, it costs money for people to adjust clocks and programming and all sorts of stuff like that. There's still a lot of human interaction. And then you go to the physiological stress on people, and it is a medical fact that especially in the spring, when you spring ahead, you lose that hour of sleep. It's very stressful on the body, and it does cause cardiac arrest and heart problems. And, you know, some people even are affected when you just get on a plane and your time zones change. But if you just generally do this and just randomly do it twice a year, forward and back, it's stress on the body. And it really doesn't save any money. It costs money to do it. Physiologically, it's a cost, and there's no benefit. Again, being a 24-hour society, whether you have the sun setting, you know, an hour later at night and you think that's a wonderful thing, or just sets the same time, you know, standard time, it just is what it is throughout the year. You know, I've been a fan of just getting rid of it. There isn't any point. And there have been many states, Melissa, that never, you know, Arizona, for example, Illinois, that's never done it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They seem to have survived, and they didn't go, the budgets didn't go, you know, crazy or something. So,
right.
Again, I just think it's a thing we do. And it's so funny that by law we have to get rid of it. But it's just kind of an absurd thing. But I really, that's one of my things I was hoping before I leave this plane of existence, that I can see that thing is gone, because twice a year it's so painful to I think all of us. There's always something in your house that doesn't automatically do it. And then, you know, you have to get used to it. It takes us a little while to get used to it. It's almost like jet lag. You know,
yeah.
Twice a year we put on ourselves.
Well, so. And I think too, Bill, and like totally correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like we also are just a society that's bad with change. Like I was reading an article about why people oppose it, and they were like, oh, I don't want my kids standing out in the dark. And I think to myself, okay, but your kids are playing, you know, lacrosse right now out in the dark because we switched the clocks and it's darker in the afternoon. Like, I think once you adjust to it, like, I just think this is what we've known our whole lives. So God forbid we change it. But like, I think, OK, if it's dark out, I'm sure the cities are going to make sure that there are lights outside at bus stops or, you know, like, I don't know. I just think sometimes we're so complacent. We're just so used to the way things have always been that it's like, oh, it's not broken. Why fix it? And to me, I'm like, well, it's actually a pain. And like, it is broken. And we have to remind people until we're blue in the face. Hey, don't forget your clocks. Don't forget your clocks. I think if we just didn't say anything, I don't think anyone would notice.
No, I 100% agree with you. If we just stopped doing it, no one's going to notice, especially this year. We could have done it during the pandemic. Nobody would have noticed, and we would have kept going. And magically, we never change the clocks, and we just keep going, and we never do it again.
That's so
true. I think in the pandemic, we should have tried it and said, you know, because of the pandemic, we're not changing the clocks. People would have been like, oh, okay, I kind of get it. Okay, that's right. It's a pandemic. For some reason, that would be okay. And then we just never would do it again.
Bill, you need to, like, run for president. I just think you are the funniest communicator. Because you're right. Like, everything you're saying makes complete sense. And you just understand the human mind so well. I'm serious.
Yeah, and I think in the long run, people go, you know what? That was kind of dumb what we did.
Right, exactly.
But you're right. Change. Once we do it and we go, well, we're not doing it anymore, that's not much of a change.
No.
You stop doing something. Most of us would forget about it. A lot of us would embrace it. And then the few of us that are having an issue with it, I don't know. That would probably be a fleeting, what, 2-day, you know, stomping your feet or something. And then then you just keep going. I don't know. I think it's just funny that we have to go through all this legislation and have, you know, more time and money spent on something that costs time and money. It's just, and then we moved it. I mean, that was even more absurd. Well, let's just move the time. We change the time for no reason. It's like, what? What are we doing? That's just silly to me.
It is.
We did it.
No, you're right.
They voted, and it got moved. And it's like, okay, now we have to remember when we do this stupid thing that we moved.
This stupid thing. Yeah.
It is. I just think it's pointless. So I'm life is too short to waste on, especially something like this. And it causes stress on us, certainly in the spring. And I just have people go, oh, but I like the extra hour. You don't notice it. You go to bed and you wake up.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, no, that's what I mean. That's where I feel like we're just, that's how it's always been, you know, and I think that's how people, like, the mentality is like, you know, that's how it's always been. So why are we going to change it now? And it's like, well, because, like, actually we all dread it. I mean, what's funny is, you know, like you just said, a few people will probably be like, like, I hate this. I hate that they're changing it. But at the same time, like, I bet you the people who literally can't stand it, that we changed the clocks for so many years, like, they will outweigh the few that are not for changing things. But like, I can't wait to not spend 2 weeks being like, hey, just so you know, 5 more days till you change your clocks. Hey, just so you know, set those alarms. And
also you really will feel better. It does affect us. It really does. I don't care who you are. It does affect us, changing the clock.
I agree.
Because we get used to it. We have a biological clock. You can't set that forward or back. And so if we're playing with that, that is a stress on our body. It seriously is a stress. And people that travel a lot, you know, they really go through, there's a lot more stress on their body when they're traveling a lot, you know, planes back and forth, especially somebody like the president, for example, you know, traveling all over. But I you know, when we do this in a national sense, it's just, why would you upset everybody in the nation pretty much biologically? Because you can't really skip out on your biological clock. I mean, it is what it is. So I think just the standard time should be there, get rid of it. 2 things off the calendar, fill in something else.
I love that. Let's just find another national holiday, like National Eat Pizza and Celebrate Bill Jackman Day. Let's do that.
And that might be, who knows, that might be our state food.
that's a whole other debate right there. Yeah.
Let's get wild. It's the Zoo Minute with Greg Dancho from Connecticut's Beardsley Zoo on Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
All right, we're checking in with Greg right now. How are you, Greg?
Good morning, Melissa. How are you? Spring is coming.
Yes,
spring,
right?
Coming.
Amen to that, my brother. Well, it actually...
Beardsley Bart says it, so I have to go with what he says.
I love that. I'm glad. I was glad that at least Beardsley Bart saw it because, you know, I wasn't too pleased to hear what Phil had to say, but that's okay. That's okay.
That's all right. Hey,
it's
everybody's
all good.
Got their opinions.
Everyone's got their opinions. That's so true. But
as far as I know, as far as all I know, that Beardsley Bart has predicted spring comes every year, and he's always right.
He's always right. You know, it does show up. I don't know what time it shows up, but it does show up. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
He actually doesn't give a date. He just says it's coming. So that's
so he's not wrong.
That's all I go by.
So he's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
I love
Never
that.
Wrong.
Well, I mean, I don't know how Bart feels about the winter and the snow and everything, but I'm always curious. It reminds me a lot of when people wonder if it snows on beaches, like what it is like to dig out a zoo. Like, I think of some of these different facilities that have to dig out during snowstorms that dump 15, 18 inches of snow. Kind of take us to earlier this week. What does it look like to dig out a zoo?
Well, my back is still telling me it's difficult. What we're trying to do here is there's multiple facets, again, to the zoo. Mm-hmm. And we do want to be open for the public. We are open all year long. So as we see a storm approaches, our staff goes into emergency preparedness.
And then emergency preparedness is making sure generators are working, making sure that our snowblowers are working, get sand for the sand truck, make sure the plows are in shape, make sure everything is getting ready to go. And then it determines on how bad the storm is going to be. This storm was going to be relatively severe. So the potential is if we had like a blizzard we had a few years ago, we will have staff actually stay on grounds. We have some areas here that staff can, again, with COVID a little more difficult, but they can maintain social distance. We can have staff actually stay on grounds before the storm actually hits, just in case we have such a bad storm that our regular staff have trouble getting into the zoo, because our primary goal is animal care, making sure the animals are taken care of.
Sure.
So that is critical. So we can have people here on grounds that can take care of the animals immediately if it takes some time for us to get in from wherever we're coming from around the area.
So that being said,
once the snow is down, yeah, it's clearing. The animals actually that are here, and we talked about this before, our animal collection plan, with the animals that we keep here, we want to make sure that they are good with our weather, good with what we have here at the zoo. And so the majority of them, a snowfall is actually pleasant.
You know, so they're into it. That was going to be my question, is like, do you have to actually go into any of the cages or any of the areas and like clear them out, or are they adjust pretty well?
And again, all depends on the severity of the storm. Our tigers and leopards and things are inside during the evening, so they're not outside. So they're in their holding areas. The wolves, again, depending on the wind and storm, they can be put inside for the evening to begin to be safe. If not, they just love being outside. If you can see pictures on our Facebook page, you'll see this. The wolves actually bury down in the snow and they love it. I mean, they sit there in the snow and they just love it to pieces.
That's so cool.
So, again, it all depends. We have some animals like our cranes. If the wind's going to be very strong, we will collect them up and put them inside. Ducks, will take them and put them inside to get them to be safe, at least for the evening, and then get them outside as soon as we possibly can. All the pathways have to be cleared. So we have roadways to be cleared off. So if we have deliveries coming in for the animals, those got to be cleared off. We have pathways for this animal care staff that have to get to their area, so those pathways have to be cleared off. We have the pathways for guests, so we try to get open as quickly as possible, so those have to be cleared off. So we're talking a major operation. It's really all hands on deck. All staff are working very, very hard from the get-go to make sure the zoo is operational, not only for them, but for also guests that come in here. The biggest concern I have always when a storm comes, especially in the wintertime, the animals know how to take care of themselves. If you give them what they need for their welfare, and animals in the cold really need, and a lot of people don't realize this, they need water, because sometimes the air is drier in the wintertime with the snow coming down than you think it is. They can dehydrate very quickly. So
right.
We make sure all the animals have water. We make sure they have enough bedding so they can get down into a nice warm bed if they have some straw and hay are being used. Make sure all the heater units are all in place. Make sure their diets are good. Do we up their diets in the wintertime to give them a little layer of fat, little layer of more body weight so they can have a little more they don't have to worry about the cold as much. But really, the things I worry about here more is our staff. Our staff
right.
is the one
Humans.
I worry about, because they're the ones out there, you know, making sure that they're not overexerting themselves, trying to dig out the snow, make sure they're taking care of themselves because it's so cold outside, make sure they bundle up, make sure they get in and warm themselves up every once in a while, because, again, these guys really, really work very hard for their animals and the animals here at the zoo. So, again, they have to be constantly being told, take a break.
Yeah.
You know, get inside, take a break. Just like you would be shoveling your driveway at home. Because they're doing that at home first, and then they're coming here and doing it double again when they get to the zoo.
Yeah, good Lord. I mean, I would have said, Greg, honestly, like pre-COVID, because I know it's sort of hard to do it now, but it would have been a very cool opportunity, I would think, like, first of all, to sleep at the zoo. I just feel like that would be very cool to experience. But second of all, like, it would be neat if, you know, you had like a group of like 10, maybe high school, even middle school volunteers who, you know, wanted to see what the process was like and have them sleep, and then you can like use them for labor.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to be careful on that. But
no, I know, exactly. But I mean, like, it would just be very cool. It actually would be, like, I would love to try that. It would be a very neat experience. Obviously, I'm totally joking.
We've had, again, pre-COVID, we were having sleepovers in our wolf cabin.
That's so cool.
Programs.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you'd
awesome.
Be able to sleep inside the wolf cabin. You've been here. You know what the wolf cabin's like.
Oh, it's awesome.
You know, it's warm. It's air-conditioned. It's heated. So in the wintertime, it's fine. And it's really cool to be able to sleep next to the window and have a wolf kind of walk by
yeah.
in the middle of the night.
Oh, like,
really
see, that sounds like a dream.
It's really kind of cool.
That is really, really cool. Yeah, I mean, obviously the shoveling would be a bonus, but no, I think that's just such a cool. I'm wondering, you know, everything kind of depends on how this pandemic's going to play out, but I just think that's such a neat opportunity because that's the other half of it is like seeing how you guys dig out, but also like sleeping over. That's just wild to me. Very,
the worst
very cool.
Worst one we had was a blizzard we had a few years ago where we literally. The city came in and was to be able to help us by bringing in another crew that came in to remove the 2 feet of snow.
Yeah,
because that
wow.
was that one was terrible. This yeah. one was be actually pretty manageable. And anytime a storm comes to me in February or to us in February, I kind of look at it not as evil eye as I do if it was in December.
Yeah,
I know this,
true.
Again, warmer weather is just around the corner. So this is just a few weeks of inconvenience, and then it'll be gone.
There you go. Greg, I always appreciate talking to you, getting some perspective from the zoo. Thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
All right. You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You too, Greg. Thank you so much.